This is Audible.
Simon & Schuster Australia presents Then There Was Her, written and narrated by Sophie Kasher. Foreword read by Jared Kasher. Dedication. Bobby Mack, Florence Margaret, and my future babies, for changing my entire perspective on life and giving me the greatest honour in life. My only wish for you is that you live happy, whatever that looks like. Mama will never judge you. Instead, I promise to be forever inspired by you. Every day is for you. Jared, my first true love, thank you for teaching me about what real family and true loyalty means. I will love you forever. Mum and Dad, for the most incredible childhood memories. I'm sorry it took me becoming a parent myself to appreciate the pressures and sacrifices you made for me and my three sisters. I now live to create as many of these as I can for my own babies. BK, for ringing me at the exact moment I needed you to. I can't imagine my life without you, nor do I ever want to.
Forward. From the moment my wife told me she was attracted to a woman, I knew our relationship was going to change dramatically. But did I think it would kick off a series of events that would eventually lead to our marriage breaking down? Not for a second. She walked in one evening after speaking on a panel, and I could just tell something was different. I'd never seen her like this before. "I had the strangest thing happen to me tonight," she said, sounding confused and excited. "I met this woman, and I was attracted to her. I don't know what it was. I've never felt like this before, but I was really turned on by this woman." I wasn't surprised at all that she had told me, because honesty was always a huge part of our relationship. It was kind of like meeting a female version of you, actually. It was weird. I couldn't have guessed how important that night would be in either of our lives. But I did know that things were about to become very different. I could see it in her eyes. She was taken by this person. There was something in the way she spoke, in her body language, that told me this was a big deal. And I know Sophie. She's an extremely driven person. And I know if she wants to do something, she'll do it, and she'll do it well. I've never met anyone like her, and I commend and respect her for it. But I knew that she was going to need to follow this thing and see where it would lead her. It was just in her nature. I wasn't worried, not exactly, but I knew in the back of my mind that something was going to happen, that there was no way this could be our last conversation about it. Of course, I had no idea where it would go, but knowing how spiritual Sophie is, I was certain it wouldn't be a one-night flirtation. When something that momentous happens to her, she needs to explore, and I was sure that she would be driven to suss out what that experience had meant and why she'd felt the way about another woman. Over the months that followed, I could tell it was playing on her mind as the two of them struck up a bit of a friendship. Soph would speak about how attractive this girl was, and she was right. This woman was hot, pointing out features she loved, dropping little comments here and there, and we'd go together to watch her play football. They were hanging out a bit, which I was totally on board with. Like I said, we were always very honest, and I was never jealous. That's just not me. I remember when she came in one morning after a big night out. It was the morning of our son's birthday party, and she'd gone out with some friends the night before. She'd crawled into bed at like 5 a.m, so hungover, and then she came in to talk to me while I was in the shower a couple of hours later. She was hunched over, clearly feeling like shit, but she had this little smirk on her face. "I've got to tell you something," she started. "You kissed her, didn't you?" She burst out laughing. "I'm not an idiot," I laughed. I knew something was going to happen, the way you kept talking about her. "So, what was it like?" Again, that's just how we were. We told each other everything. She was hungover as all hell, telling me about it, sharing exactly what happened. And it was so clear that in that moment that things were going to change, and they were going to change quickly. Back then, she was so straight, So for her to be then kissing a woman was big. I just knew it wasn't nothing. Anyway, Soph was like the Walking Dead, and we had to get out of the house to get our kids to our son Bobby's birthday party. So we didn't talk about it anymore until we were back home, having a cigarette out the back. It became pretty clear that she was more confused by the situation than anything. There was no malicious intent from her, and this thing went on and continued to develop. Soph was more puzzled than I was, so through the whole process, I just tried to put myself in her shoes and think about how she would be coping. She was so open and honest about everything with me, and there was no point in me getting upset. It wouldn't have achieved anything. I wasn't jealous at all, probably because I also wasn't surprised. Even though I was her husband and we were living under the one roof, I didn't see it as my place to pry and ask questions the whole time. If Soph wanted to come and talk to me about it, then she did, and I'd just sit and listen. I left it up to her to open up to me when she felt comfortable. Because if I'd been constantly asking questions, she would have thought I was cracking the shits or getting upset, and I think that would have probably pushed her away. As far as I was concerned, the ball was in her court with how she wanted to express herself and talk about the situation she was in. On the outside, it probably looked like we had it all, and we did have it good. We were the envy of all our couple friends, great sex life, two beautiful kids, a home together. But I was dealing with some of my own issues that were completely separate to what Soph was going through with her sexuality and exploring herself. And those two things, Soph's self-discovery and my own problems, they came to a head in 2019. Months after she discovered her attraction to women and around the end of 2018, Sophie came to me and said things needed to change with us. To be honest, I didn't see it coming. I really didn't, despite her starting to have more experiences with women. Looking back, I might have gotten a little comfortable in the relationship, a little complacent, but it was sort of where we were in that moment. I was a stay-at-home dad, and at the time I was also going through the process to join the police force. I got to the last stage of applying and was knocked back for reasons that were outside of my control, to do with family history, relatives that had been in trouble with the law. I was open and honest in declaring that, and I was pretty shattered when I was refused because of things other people had done. I think that's where my problems really started. I was always the kid that wanted to be a police officer. Still inside me now, as a 30-year-old man, the 8-year-old boy is running around the house with his plastic gun on his hip, his badge, his handcuffs, wanting to be a copper. I knew I'd make a fucking excellent police officer too. And it's a career that can open so many doors. I was desperate to get in. And then when I didn't, I was completely lost. I'd come from playing AFL football, professional football, and as an athlete, I'd developed a particular mindset, which I still have. When you leave that high-intensity world and you come back to the everyday 9-to-5, it's really hard to figure out where you fit in. Where am I going to get my kick from? How am I going to fuel that fire inside of me? Trying to find a passion that resembles training and playing at such a high intensity is really tough. And when the only thing I'd ever wanted to do was taken away, I felt like I'd lost my purpose in life. I never let Sophie in on how bad I was. She knew I was struggling, but while all of this was going on for me, she was also going through her own stuff. She was out there exploring on this amazing journey of self-discovery, and at that time, forging her own career in such a motivated headspace. Meanwhile, I was going through the complete opposite direction. Soph was earning great money, but it got to the point where she didn't want all the financial pressure on her. So I went and got a job as an orderly at a hospital. The pay wasn't amazing, but having that second income was handy. The hours were good, it was shift work, so it was pretty flexible, but it wasn't something I was passionate about. I'd wake up in the morning and I'd be in this fucking foul mood for no reason. She'd ask me what was wrong, and I'd tell her I was fine. It'd take her all day just to get out of me that I was in a shit mood and I didn't know why. I noticed she'd have her girlfriends and footy over more and more. And some nights, when I'd get home from work, I felt like I wasn't wanted in my own home. I loved hanging out with all the girls, too, but it was always just this underlying feeling I wasn't welcome. I don't think it was intentional on her part at all, but I do wonder if she had her friends over a lot to distract her from being alone with me and the kids because of the shit we were going through. Just after we moved into a new house, it really hit home for me. how torn she was over where to go with our relationship. One night we pulled up in the driveway and we were just sitting there in the car talking about our relationship, and she broke down in tears. "Look, I think you've just got to do this, Soph," I told her. "You've got to do it for us. I can't take any more of this back and forth." On the surface, there had been nothing wrong throughout all of 2018. We were still having sex with each other and everything seemed almost normal. But something wasn't quite right. "You've got an itch. You've got to scratch it," I told her. "Whether this is something casual that you explore every now and then or whether you are now gay, you've got to find out for yourself. But more importantly, you have to find out for us. Because what do we do? Do we stay married but more openly, and this is something you casually tap into? Or is it the end for us? Do we separate? Whether it's a phase or it's you for life, you have to do this for your sake and for our sake. And whatever happens, I'll be here for you." Sophie had said to me multiple times that I didn't have to be so supportive of her exploring when we separated. And I guess she was right. I could have gone the other way with how I reacted. I could have been a real prick about it. But I have too much respect for her as a mother of my children, and as a woman not to help her and support her. Because me being a prick and storming out, being an egotistical male, wasn't going to help the situation. And at the end of the day, I was never in the dark about anything. And I respect Soph for that. I'm not in the dark about her life now, either because I'm the first person to call when she needs someone to talk to. She knows she can trust me, and I know I can trust her. But after she hooked up with another woman a few times, I think she started to feel guilty about the whole situation. And that's what led to the breakdown that night in the car. As happy as I was to support her, I was still not doing well mentally, dealing with my own lack of purpose in life. Soph knew I was struggling, but I never told her about it. It got to the point I thought about taking my own life. It was always the thought of my kids that kept me going, because I love being a dad so much. But the hatred I had for myself when I looked in the mirror, I couldn't stand the person I saw looking back at me. Soph and I were still living together at this stage, which was hard because she was on such a high. Yes, she was going through a lot of her own transitions, but she was on this incredible trajectory with what she wanted in life and in her career. Meanwhile, I was caught on a downward spiral. Even though we hadn't completely called time on our marriage yet, there were times I could clearly see that it was ending. In Easter 2019, we went away for a weekend to a friend's place in Torquay, and the girl Soph was seeing came too. And that did hurt a bit. I was in one room with the kids while Soph was two doors down with her new partner. And even though she'd pulled me aside to discuss the sleeping arrangements and we'd come to that decision together, it was still a bit of a tough one for me. It was the right thing to do. Soph was seeing someone. I wasn't going to make her stay in a room with me and have the person she was seeing sleep by themselves. But it was a strange situation, and reflecting on that weekend now, I probably shouldn't have gone. Soph was always checking in and making sure I was okay with everything too. It wasn't a quick conversation. It was an ongoing discussion between us. If we ever felt uncomfortable or as if we needed to say something, we could. We always communicated everything really well, and it wasn't like I was sitting around miserable or always at home with the kids while she was out living her best life. She gave me ample opportunity to go out, but where I was at in my life at that stage, I didn't want to. My biggest problem was that I didn't let her in enough to how I was really feeling it sometimes. I often put up a wall and said I was fine when I should have given more of an indication of what was going on with me. But I was brought up never to sook, never to complain, just put everything aside and get on with things. So sometimes when I express my emotions, I feel like I'm having a whinge. I did open up a bit on that weekend away though. Soph and our friend sat me down and asked me what was wrong, and I remember crying, telling them I would wake up in the morning in what I call rages. I had all this pent-up anger inside of me that I didn't know how to release. I remember saying to them I would sometimes sit in my car and want to go head-on into a tree because I didn't know how to express what I had inside me. It got to a point where I needed to make a decision. So if we've got to announce we're separating, we just have to get it out there. I know she was hesitant, but as long as we were under the same roof, still a happily married couple, according to the public, I couldn't pursue my own happiness. She would tell me I needed to get out there, have some fun, have sex with someone, but I couldn't. The reality of it is I was one of the most recognisable husbands in Melbourne, thanks to our social media profile. So if I went out to a nightclub and tried to pick someone up, people were going to see me and think, what the fuck? He's married with two kids. I explained that to Sophie and she understood. I was living in a house where her needs were being fulfilled, and I was genuinely happy that was happening for her, but mine weren't. For my sake, we needed to announce that we were separating. Once we did, I started to feel better about myself in terms of where I wanted to go, and I'm in a much better place now. I'm much more at peace, and I believe I'm now starting to find my journey, to find myself. I'm finally doing what Soph was doing 3 years ago. I've gone through all the shit, and I'm now starting to come out the other side with some clarity around where I want to take my life and my career. What I never told Sophie is that her journey and everything she went through inspired me to go out and find my own direction. She helped me sit back and realise that we actually weren't happy. I wasn't happy. I was acting like a miserable sack of shit because I've had to live a life according to someone else's rule book. A life of just work, come home, try to be the best husband, go to work again, come home, on repeat forever. But then there was her, pushing boundaries to find her true happiness and making me ask myself, well, why can't I do that too?
Forward. It was a Monday afternoon in mid-2019 and I had taken my trusty lieutenant of nearly 16 years out for lunch to celebrate her birthday. While eating, we spoke about how I wanted to diversify our business and bring on more clients who were working outside the sports environment we traditionally focused on. I was looking to shift focus to include entertainment and the new digital world that was taking over everything we do. Sophie Keisha has recently left her agent. She posted it on her Instagram page, was the reply my coworker gave to my long-winded spiel. Now, the name was familiar, but I did need a bit of prompting to see who this Sophie Keisha person actually was. So I pulled up her Instagram page and we started scrolling. For the next 30 minutes, as we perused her page, searching for signs that she could be a good fit for our business, I realised there seemed to be so much more to this person than a pretty face. Send her an email, my colleague suggested. What do you got to lose? Absolutely nothing. Hey Sophie, hope you're well. I read with interest that you don't currently have a manager. I would love to sit down with you and see what it was that didn't work with your last manager and if you are open to working with a management group. I've been an agent for 15 years and my company represents talent in a range of disciplines. Our office is in Melbourne, actually in Essendon. Let me know if you have any interest in having a chat over a coffee sometime. There's a great place right near our office that is perfect for a casual catch-up. Looking forward to hearing from you. Regards, Bruce. After lunch, we headed back to the office, and I was curious to see if the mysterious Sophie would email us back or if it would get lost in the digital ether, which so often happens. I have a rule that I often reflect on, especially in our line of work. When approaching a prospective client, I believe their response says a lot about the genuine chance of them becoming a part of our business. If they respond, thanks, but no thanks, they're either happy, can't be fucked taking another meeting, or content with the devil they know. If they respond that they would be happy to catch up for a coffee, then it's in our hands. They have likely looked over our website and social media platforms, have developed an interest in understanding how we can help them, and the game is ours to win or lose. At 4:08 p.m., I received a reply. Hi, Bruce. Thanks for getting in touch. Would be happy to have a coffee, and I'm an Essendon local. How good? What's next week look like for you? Thanks, Soph. I couldn't have known as we sat down for a coffee a few days later that I was meeting a woman who is not only an amazing talent, but also someone I now call one of my best friends. When Sophie talks about her family, her business, her relationships, or digital marketing, the energy and passion that bursts out of her is overwhelmingly infectious. But she's not all talk. Sophie is as studious as she is driven, always well researched and prepared for a balanced discussion or a convincing argument. Anyone who truly knows her will have experienced this firsthand and will no doubt be grinning at reading this. For me, the words authentic, honest, raw, and insightful come to mind when I think of Sophie Keisha. I could cite countless examples of times she displayed all these qualities, and you only need to visit her various social media platforms to experience any one of them. Her ability to build an audience of like-minded fans, followers, and friends who are equally as inspired as she is That's an amazing skill, as is her knack for inspiring others, myself included, to be better, to do better, and to always challenge the status quo. It's a quality that should feature in a new world version of the classic How to Win Friends and Influence People. Then there was her, as the title suggests, takes the reader on a journey of exploration, maturation, human dynamics, love, and loss, as seen through the eyes of a young girl, an adolescent, a young mum and wife, a loving partner, and perhaps above all, a woman who is determined to be unbound by social norms. Sophie's ability to share her experiences and articulate them in a way that makes you feel you are there, living them alongside her, aligns with her expressive, unique, and creative way of storytelling, something those close to her are privileged to experience on a day-to-day basis. If you have enjoyed following Soph on social media or listening to her various podcasts, you will know her distinctive voice and you will love delving deeper into what has inspired this incredible lady and the experiences that have helped shape and transform her into the person she is today. It is now late 2021 and Sophie and I have been working together for more than 2 years. I could never have imagined that the woman who I met for a coffee back in 2019 would become such a loyal friend and supporter. She is someone who will support the people she loves unconditionally, refraining from any judgment, but is also willing to give feedback and keep you in check if it's required. When you find people like this, like Soph, and you happen to enjoy their company, you find yourself wanting to spend more time in their presence, and there are few people whose presence I enjoy more than hers. Sophie, thank you for asking me to write your foreword. Ours has and continues to be an eventful but hugely rewarding journey. From the moment we first spoke about this project, I knew that the end result would be a book that speaks to so many different audiences, and one that will inspire and empower those who read it to be true to themselves, dare to dream, and live with no regrets. I can't wait to see what her next move will be. Bruce.
Chapter 1. I was running late again. At almost 30, you'd think I'd have learnt by now how to manage my time a little better. But no, I still insisted on challenging myself to get anywhere and everywhere in the shortest amount of time possible. Only 8 weeks earlier, I'd given birth to my second baby, my daughter, Florence, and I was on my way to one of my first working events since she'd arrived as a guest speaker on an AFL panel. I've always worked hard, but let me tell you, dolling yourself up for a guest speaking appearance while you still have stitches in your fanny was new territory for me. It was early 2017, the league's inaugural season was about to kick off, and I'd been invited to speak because I'd grown up in a pretty well-known footy family, the Shaw family, and I'm a vocal advocate for female representation in sport. My dad had always worked in the AFL professionally, as both a player and a coach with Fitzroy, Essendon, and the Adelaide Football Clubs, as well as in senior management at Fremantle Football Club, so I basically grew up in footy change rooms around the country. Plus, I had married an AFL player. I had lived and breathed the game at every stage of my life, so it made a lot of sense that I was so passionate about it. I know the game, I love the game, and I was absolutely stoked when the AFLW started up. I'd taken Floss to the first ever AFLW game when she was 10 days old, which was such an emotional night for me as both a woman and a mother. Sure, I think the hormones were still raging through my body, but it was also such a significant, huge moment in history for both females and the future of our position in sport. And the fact that I got to be there with my daughter to witness it was really special. So there I was, racing to speak for an audience, the sweat dripping from under my milk-filled udders, running down my stomach and soaking into the postnatal recovery shorts I decided to squeeze on underneath my leather skirt. Whose brilliant idea was that? I raced into the hotel where the panel was being held, ran into the lift and pressed the button. Wrong floor, of course. Fuck. I was a sweaty mess and so nervous about getting up on stage. Not because of any fear of speaking, more so because I was still in postpartum haze. And I reiterate, the boob sweat was real. It's an issue on any given day with size 12 double G boobs, but add two proverbial gigantic hot water bottles on your chest, thanks to your now 14 I cup breastfeeding boobies, and whoa, it's wet and wild under your shirt. As a company director, digital marketer, social media influencer, and the owner of multiple businesses, I hold myself to a high standard when it comes to work events, speaking events in particular, and I strive to be the consummate professional. My personal presentation is so important to me, so I always like to source and style myself, as well as making sure that my prepared talk is in immaculate condition. I am a cram under pressure type of gal, and it's always worked for me. It's how I operated best throughout school, university, and now for work. So in regard to my preparation ahead of speaking engagements, it's not uncommon to find me sitting up late at night, surrounded by pages and pages of handwritten notes. I've always retained information best by handwriting it, covering information on my expected talking points. I've also been known to stick notes up around my bathroom as a way of retaining information in order to present to the best of my capabilities. As the elevator dinged to let me know I was at the right level, I could feel the panic rising. Oh God, is my boob leaking? I fumbled with my bag as the doors opened and I stepped through. "Just in the green room to your right, Sophie," a lovely staff member said as she ushered me towards a door. The tiny room was buzzing as the other women inside all chatted to each other. I didn't know who they all were at first, but the handful of girls wearing their club polos were obviously the footy players I'd be speaking alongside up on stage any minute. When you're on a panel, it's pretty standard to be introduced to a whole lot of people all within the space of 60 seconds. And as I was taken around the room and introduced to football players, administrators, various volunteers and other people whose roles I now can't recall, just remembering everyone's names was far too much to take in, given my newborn-induced sleep deprivation and the tears I was in over being late. All I could think about was the mustache I hadn't had time to wax. Shit, have I got a sweat droplet hanging off my top lip? "Hi, I'm Sophie. Nice to meet you." "Hi, yes, Sophie Keisha, so lovely to meet you." And so it went on. Then there was her. "Hi." My world froze. When you hear about people throwing out phrases like "the world stopped" or "I saw stars," I always thought it sounded like a bit of bullshit. But as I shook this woman's hand, the electric current that ran between us was instantaneous. Energy ran between us, or perhaps just coming from my end. It was as close to an out-of-body experience as I could have ever imagined, and I'd never felt anything like it before in my life. Time stood completely still. And yes, I am now one of those people who says that stars surrounded her in slow motion. My mind was racing as she introduced herself. Who is this woman? I need to know her. Oh my God, look at her arms. They're so sexy. She wasn't pretty. Not in the traditional sense that I'd been made to believe, thanks to societal conditioning, anyway. During a discussion in late 2020 with my good friend, Denny Todorovich, a proud non-binary human and an activist in the LGBTQIA+ community, we spoke about this concept. Once upon a time, we'd both associated the word pretty with femininity, a clear indication we agreed that we'd been taught to associate certain descriptive words with gender stereotypes. But this is a way of thinking from which we've since both evolved. It is important for me to note this as part of my story so that when I have labelled or stereotyped, it's clear that these were the beliefs and thoughts of a past version of Sophie, not the evolution of her. The woman who stood before me at the event was much shorter than me and very masculine in appearance. Something else I have learned over the past few years is that I instantly assumed her gender and pronouns based once again on societal conditioning, rather than asking her, though I now know how she identifies. She had soft, beautiful skin that seemed to glow, yet had muscular arms and bulging veins from her fingertips to her biceps. Something I'd never seen up close on a female before. Her eyes were piercing, sharp, the kind that looks straight into your soul. I found myself inspecting her hands as she so firmly shook mine. They were strong, sturdy, with very short nails bitten down to the bed. Protruding veins, as I'd so often seen on guys. Man hands, I called them. When she spoke, her voice was deeper than I expected. Even her scent was masculine, and it struck me that physically she possessed everything that I'd found attractive in my husband. She wore no makeup, her hair was thrown into a bun on top of her head, she was completely untouched. So, whilst my then-conditioned brain hadn't labelled her as pretty, she was without a doubt the most strikingly beautiful person I had ever seen in my life. And it was in that moment my world changed forever. I'd never felt this way about anyone before, so instantaneous, and certainly not about a woman. I'd always been able to appreciate another woman's physical beauty upon introduction, but this feeling was something new to me. This wasn't just me objectively taking in her looks. This was intense attraction, and I had never been physically attracted to a woman before in my life. So while one part of my brain was absolutely entrapped by this gorgeous, intriguing, powerfully sexy woman standing in front of me, shaking my hand, then the other half of me was thinking, "What the fuck, Sophie? Why are you attracted to her? Why are you attracted to a woman?" I admit, I was really rattled after that. The next few moments were a blur as I went around the room chatting with the other people who would be speaking that day, prepping to get up on stage. But I kept looking over my shoulder. Who is that woman? And why do I care? I was married, after all, and still very much in love with my husband. We'd just had our second baby, for God's sake. We were happy. I was happy. Our relationship was wonderful. Sure, there were a few issues, but nothing out of the ordinary. Nothing you wouldn't expect to see in any marriage at some point. In the 8 years I'd been with Jared, my eyes had never found their way to anyone else, male or female, with this level of intensity, intrigue, or sexual attraction. Whatever had just passed between me and this woman, I was truly shaken, and as the night wore on, I couldn't tear my eyes away from her, even as I was speaking. I couldn't stop staring at her nails. They were so different to my pink acrylic talons, and I was surprised when I realised I liked them. Usually I'd be thinking, "Oh God, look at her fucking nails, what are you doing?" But I wasn't. I recognised she was different to me, to anything I'd ever been surrounded by, and I liked it. All I could think was how sexy those hands were, what they'd be able to do to me. Listening to her talk later during breaks in the program, hearing snippets about her life and how passionate she was about female equality in sport, I soon found I was no longer just intrigued by her looks. I was quickly becoming interested in her as a person. She spoke so confidently, so assuredly, and with such passion about footy, something that I loved so much too. I was so absorbed in her stories about her life, her time in the sport, what it meant to her to be there that night, and I could see that there was, in fact, more to her than moisturised biceps and intoxicating eyes. She was really intelligent, empowering, and most appealing to me, she was really interesting. I had to get to know her. As the night wrapped up, we all stood around mingling for a while, and I wasn't surprised at this point to discover I was totally giddy around her. We were all standing around talking as a group, but I was completely fixated on this woman. I was surprised to realise, though, that she seemed to be interested in me as well. Not completely besotted in the way that I was with her, but there was something there drawing her to me. She admitted that she had no idea who I was before the event, but had Googled me and seen that I had 200,000 Instagram followers. She looked impressed. I've always found it quite hilarious when people I've met have warranted me some celebrity status because of the number count of my followers list. Even elite athletes or famous Australian actors have done this, when in fact it's me standing there, jaw to the floor over them. They are the professionals. They are the real deal. They are the famous ones here who deserve recognition and notoriety. Despite what some people would like to believe, Instagram followers have never been significant to me. Sure, for my career they are. In my role on social media, I am paid purely based on statistics, market reach, ROI, traction, target set audiences, etc. But some live with the narrative that just because we work on social media, that we live by social media. And for me, that's so far from the truth. The more we chatted amongst the crowd, the more I got the sense that I, too, had intrigued this woman. So we followed each other on Instagram, exchanged a few details, and made plans to catch up. After what I didn't realise at the time would be a life-changing meeting, I got in an Uber and I went home to my husband and my two babies. I had no idea what my feelings meant at that point. The confusion left me in a silent stare out of my window. All I knew was that I needed to know more. As my Uber wove through the streets, away from her, taking me further and further from the fantasy and back to my life, I scrolled through the photos I had taken on the night with various people at the event, including her. Oh gosh, I look so bad, I thought. Never mind the fact that I'd birthed my second baby just a few weeks earlier, I still judged myself harshly based on the possible perception of me she might be left with. Always a naturally confident person, one who has been blessed with quite a positive outlook on my physical appearance, I suddenly hated that photo. I hated that she might see it later and think I wasn't perhaps as appealing as she remembered. I didn't care if it was on social media for the world to see. I cared what she was going to think, that she would think I looked bad. I walked in the front door, bursting to tell Jared about the night. You would not believe what just happened to me, I laughed, setting my bag down on the kitchen table as I filled him in. I just had my moment. Jared and I had talked about these moments in the past. You know, the love at first sight moments, those people who swear they met someone and fell instantly in love. I was previously a bit judgmental about the idea of a moment, I'll admit, based on the fact that I'd always believed love and attraction went far deeper than purely looks. I'd always found myself attracted to and more inclined to get to know someone based on a soul connection and if their personality could make me laugh. But if this wasn't love at first sight, what was it? All I knew was that this was my first encounter of a moment. I've just met this girl, I giggled to Jared. This woman. And I think I've got a crush on her. I think I just had my moment. It was normal for Jared and I to be so blatantly open with each other. If a beautiful woman walked past us in the supermarket, I would watch Jared look at her and giggle. Jealousy was never, ever a trait of mine in that relationship. We understood each other on such a deep-rooted level, and with such open communication at all times comes great trust and respect. I was completely transparent with him about the night and how things had played out, my feelings I'd felt through both my mind and my body. But I didn't like girls. I was married to a man. I'd only ever dated men. I'd only ever had sexual experiences with men. My confusion was obvious as I explained to Jared in detail my attraction towards her arms and her hands, her deep voice, the way she spoke about playing footy like Jared would. Yet, she was a girl with boobs and a vagina. What the fuck? We were both in hysterics when I proclaimed, "Jared, she even gave me fanny flutters." After an intense conversation about her, we headed to bed as usual, neither of us having any idea that this conversation would lead us to spending the next few years navigating our entire relationship. Although much, much later, Jared confessed to me that he'd seen a spark in me that night that he'd never witnessed before, and he knew nothing would ever be the same again. When I tell you it was a slow burn from there, I mean it was slow. It might have been an instant attraction for me, but there was a lot to process. This woman and I had become friendly on Instagram, commenting on each other's posts, replying to each other's stories, but it was nothing, right? Just some schoolgirl crush that I would giggle about over cocktails with my friends. Oh, Jesus, my best friend joked. You watch all of us start finally settling down at 30 and you'll be going through a midlife crisis, getting divorced and becoming a lesbian. I couldn't have predicted that that joke would become a reality. I didn't know if she was seeing anyone, if she might have a boyfriend, or if she could possibly be gay. Looking back now, it's obvious to me where she was at in her life, but at the time I was totally naive to this unexplored world. I soon became obsessed with finding out if she had a partner. Why did I care, though? I was happily married. To a man. Remember, Sophie? I didn't even like girls, right? Yet here I was, so heavily invested into a life I shouldn't have cared about. As I dived deep on her Insta page, scrolling back through photos, treading dangerously in that you've scrolled back to 2016, please don't accidentally like a photo territory, I noticed she had a few snaps with this one particular girl, but I was at a loss to find the concrete evidence I needed. No lovey-dovey captions that I was renowned for spurting to the internet. No obvious displays of affection in the pictures. Not even a glimpse of a love emoji to seal the deal. Maybe they're just housemates, I reasoned. It could be her best friend. What an idiot. My stomach knotted up and I got butterflies every time she messaged me. And even though our interactions didn't feel flirty, I wanted to flirt with this woman. I was getting a kick out of her. I'd get excited when my phone would light up and I'd see her name on my screen. Jared was across all of this, mind you, and I cannot stress that enough. This wasn't some top secret operation, an illicit emotional affair or a devious plot I had concocted behind his back. I read him every single message we would send each other, and it became almost a little joke between us, him laughing at how giddy I was when she'd text, but then going on to help me draft a response. Looking back, I can't figure out if I was at the point of even understanding what was actually happening here, or if I was simply in denial. Because whilst it was a bit of fun for me, it was never something I would have even considered acting on back then. I was married. I thought I was happy. Jared was great. I was just having some harmless fun. Finally, I got it out of her. Yes, she had a girlfriend. Yes, it was the woman in the pictures on her Instagram. And yes, they'd been together for a few years. I respected that and almost found it a relief. Was she now off limits to me? Not because I was in a committed marriage, mind you, but because she had a partner. It did give me a slight wake-up call, a bit of a dog shaking the water off its fur moment. But somehow, no matter how dry I thought I was leaving a trail of wet footprints behind me. She still held so much intrigue for me. Did I ever consider acting on it? Absolutely not, and not because I wasn't allowed to. Freedom to experiment was on the table within our relationship. Not constantly, but if a fun sexual experience arose, we would always discuss it with an open mind. It was being with a woman that was not a possibility for me. The thought just didn't make sense to me, despite how much it appeared my body was starting to crave it. Nope, she's a cool chick. We're going to be great friends, my logical brain would tell itself. But those hands, those fingers, what would they feel like inside of me? It was not even something I allowed my brain to consciously consider. And I thought that if I didn't give my attraction to this woman the credit that it really deserved, then maybe it wouldn't be real. So I tried to forget it. I tried to forget her. But I couldn't. I so desperately wanted to know her, to be a part of her life. Was this really her, though, I would ask myself? Or was it that this fantasy was providing me with something I was lacking in my real life? I got my chance to see her again a couple of months later. I'd been invited to a charity walk called Move in May, which is run by Stand Up Events, an organisation that delivers programs to create safe and inclusive environments for everyone whilst fighting sexual and gender discrimination in sport. Founder Angie Green has not only become a good friend of mine over the years, but she's also played an integral role in my education across the LGBTQIA+ space, and I am forever grateful to be an ally alongside her. I was going to be attending with my family, my husband, my son, and my daughter, and you'd best believe I was counting down the days. I was so excited that I'd be seeing her again, this woman I hadn't been able to get off my mind since that first meeting. Oh my God, I'm going to see her again. Oh shit, I'm going to see her again. What should I wear? How should I do my hair? I wanted to look good, for her. What is actually going on with me here? I'd always loved being sexy for my husband. I loved nothing more than when I'd be in the bathroom getting ready for a night out or an event and he'd come in and say, "Oh, fuck, you look amazing." My entire life, I'd never dressed for anyone except myself until I met Jared. He always looked at me with such admiration, no matter what I looked like. But it was nice to see his face when I'd dressed up and made an effort. I didn't even care what anyone else thought. I'm always confident in how I dress, I always love what I wear, and I feel good in it. But if I was out to impress someone else, it was Jared and Jared only. I wanted to look good for my man, you know? Yet suddenly, here I was wanting to look good for someone else. For her. It was now her that I wanted to make think, wow, when I walked in. Even though the reality was I was only going to be wearing activewear since we were going to partake in a 4 kilometre walk. Still, I fake tan the night before and I carefully stuck on false eyelashes with expert precision the morning of the walk. Because of course, fake eyelashes and some terribly bad fake tan hands were going to make this woman fall head over heels in love with me. I was nervous, so nervous that I was going to see her. Sophie, what the fuck? Why do you feel like this? Clearly, what I was feeling was more than just friends. But while I was inching towards admitting that to myself, part of my brain just wouldn't fully accept it. I didn't have any intentions of cheating on my husband, but that wasn't even the biggest factor standing in the way. It was simply, I'm not gay. I am not bisexual. I'm not. Being with a woman didn't even occur to me as an option, which sounds crazy now, but in terms of my upbringing, the way I grew up, I wasn't surrounded by gay women. I had never seen that side to life. To me, you found a man specifically. You got married, you had babies, you got a cute house with a nice white picket fence. It was the suburban dream, and it was the only option I thought I had, the option that had been ingrained into me since early childhood. I wasn't against same-sex relationships at all, of course. It just wasn't something I'd ever considered to be part of my journey or an idea I'd explored for myself. So, for anyone who has been through or is currently facing a similar identity crisis as this, you can imagine both the shock and the internal struggle I began to process as the realization dawned on me that I had actual feelings for her. We arrived at the charity walk and I quickly found her amongst the crowd. She introduced me to her friends, mostly footy players and other women with their female partners, and again, I was instantly intrigued. These people were so wildly different to all the women I knew, the girls I'd grown up with, and the social circles with which I'd regularly associated. They had such a naturally warm, welcoming vibe about them, a safe space, I felt. And they were all so unique and confident in their individuality. No one cared who I was or what I did. I was simply a friend of a friend, and that was enough for me to be instantly accepted by the group with open arms. As we all got to know each other and they handed my gorgeous baby daughter around for selfies, I observed this woman within her natural habitat. What was it about her and this group that made me feel like I too wanted to be here? Still, it would be another whole year before I began to pay any real attention to the feelings that she'd stirred up inside of me since our first meeting. We stayed chatty on Instagram, but to be honest, I don't think I could call us actual friends at this stage. I'd go to watch her games when I had time, and I was starting to become mates with people in her circle. But the whole time, despite many hot and cold attempts at shutting it down, I still had this hidden crush. This obsession, this fascination smouldering away in the back of my mind. I assume that a conservative, straight thinker would approach this situation with a completely different mindset than I did. And I'm sure there will be many readers here with frustration that I didn't pay attention to the red flags waving dramatically in front of my face at this point. I was constantly fighting my intense attraction to her. And I'd go in waves of shutting it down fiercely to focus on my life as a married woman and a mother of two. But my true spirit kept reminding me that I was entitled to wonder, to dream, and to allow my intrigue to run free. The internal struggle is something I probably haven't spoken about to many people aside from Jared and my best friend. Never family, never online. The reality was that I didn't even know what was happening to me, and that's why when people asked for answers, I didn't have any to give. So many times I truly thought it would all go away. That perhaps my marriage had hit a few hiccups thanks to reoccurring issues that I couldn't see changing, and that I was just taking this opportunity to distract my mind temporarily. But deep down, that was the mind of a society-trained young woman, and not the real Sophie. The true Sophie goes off the power of intuition, passionate love and emotion, and a constant yearning for more in this thing we call life. Chapter 2. As the youngest of four girls, I've always been the baby of the family. My twin sisters are in the middle. They're 2 years older than me, and then there's my elder sister, who's 7 years older than me. As far back as my memory can take me, Mum stayed home with us, and she was definitely dedicated to our home life, running a tight ship, a hot dinner on the table every night at 6:30 p.m. while we watched the Australian classic Neighbours. My dad worked in AFL footy, so he was away a lot for work ever since I was very young. I always thought it was a really cool job, and with most of my childhood spent growing up in Melbourne, the heart of AFL, so did a lot of people around me. It was because of Dad's job that I had quite a unique childhood, one that took me to some interesting places and one that took myself and my family through both light and dark times. Dad worked as a senior coach at Fitzroy from 1991 to 1994, Adelaide Footy Club from 1995 to 1996, and was an assistant coach at Essendon Football Club from 1999 to 2005 alongside Kevin Sheedy. The Bombers won the Premiership in 2002, so I got to experience some things that fellow AFL superfans could only dream of. Riding in players' cars for the grand final parade, typical young Sophie waving to the crowd like she had some sort of significance. Having the Windy Hill security code so I could walk in and out of the club as a 10-year-old to go see Dad and the players. Essendon was renowned for being a very open family club. And having AFL greats like James Hurd, Matthew Lloyd and the Johnson brothers over for dinner every week. Tuesday dinners were the norm for us, and back then that was a huge flex. All the boys at school were in awe when I tell them who was coming around that night. Oh, so seriously, can we come? Only occasionally would Mum let me bring just one of the boys, so they'd battle for the spot. I felt like the coolest kid in school. But it wasn't always that way. When Dad was senior coaching at Adelaide, that was really a tough time for all of us as a family, and looking back now, I believe it significantly shaped me into the person I am now as an adult. I get extremely emotional when I revisit this part of my life. Despite some of the memories being hazy, the emotion and pain in my chest are forever fresh. I was 4 years old when we moved to South Australia for my dad to take up the biggest role in sport in the state at the time. At that stage, Port Adelaide didn't yet exist, so Adelaide, with its small town vibe, was heavily focused on the Adelaide Crows. And Jesus fucking Christ, were they hardcore. When the team wasn't performing well, the entire city of Adelaide turned against my dad. Because in sport, if a team isn't performing, the coach must cop all of the blame, right? Well, not all of it. His kids and wife had to cop some of that shit too. My sisters and I were just little kids when all of this was going on. We didn't understand the extent of the hatred being directed at my dad and the whole family. My older twin sisters and I would race to the front door on the morning of a game day to count how many eggshells we could find all over the front of our house and in the garden. It was a fun game we liked to play. We were so innocent to the malicious acts that had occurred during the night. My older sister tells a story of being 11 years old at the local Semaphore Blockbuster, getting a Friday night video when Dad was approached by a disgruntled Crows fan who politely told Dad, in front of his daughter, how shit he was and that he needed to fuck off back to Victoria. Dad, who never usually reacted in these situations, furiously chased this man out of the store. He was always brave enough to put on a front for himself, but he was and still is a fierce protector of his girls. My poor mum was ostracised in our own neighbourhood. No one at the footy club wanted to be friends with the coach's wife if the team wasn't winning. She had one friend, Leanne, who she'd met through my sister's netball club. Leanne is still one of my mum's best friends today and is someone I consider family, a true sign of loyalty and a genuine adult friendship that I can now appreciate as an adult myself. There would be journalists out the front of the house, bashing on the door, pushing it open and shoving cameras in my mum's face. Towards the end, we even had a security guard who would sit out the front of our house in his car 24/7, just making sure we were all safe, not that me or my sisters had a clue why he was there. We just thought he was a family friend that we'd wave to on the way to school. I saw my mum cry a lot, but I never understood why. I remember seeing her out in the driveway on her hands and knees, still in her dressing gown, so early it was still dark, scrubbing my dad's car on game day because it had been vandalised. "Mum, what are you doing?" She'd shoo me away, telling me to hurry back inside. I now know it was because she didn't want Dad to know about it. In a sense, I consider myself quite lucky that I was too young then to comprehend what was actually going on, because looking back now, as a devoted mum to Bobby and Floss, and as a partner, it must have been horrific for both of my parents to experience this, but to have to stay strong, not just for each other, but for their four children who they'd packed up and moved interstate. For my dad, seeing what his family was being put through simply because of his job, but also for my mum, because she could see her husband out there busting his ass in a very public job to provide a life for the family, only to be humiliated and hung at the cross for a public stoning every weekend. My sisters and I were also severely bullied thanks to the team's failings. I have raw memories of screaming, crying, refusing to go to school, and my mum, who was obviously upset too, having to literally drag me to the car, shut me in and lock the door just to get me there. I'd wake up in the morning pretending to be sick too, in the hope I wouldn't be sent. I'd cry and beg mum to believe me, racking my brains for yet another excuse that might mean I could stay home. I must have been in prep or kindy at the time, and what breaks my heart the most is that while I don't remember a lot around the specific reason I so desperately didn't want to be there, I do remember the feeling, the emotion, the desperation of wanting to be anywhere but at school. I was 5 years old. "Please don't make me go, Mummy." There is one moment I do recall very clearly, though. I was 5, just 1 year older than my daughter is now, and I was out on the oval. It must have been lunchtime. I was on my own, as usual, as I didn't have any friends. Similar to Mum, everyone had ostracised me and my sisters long ago because Adelaide was losing, and obviously, it was our dad's fault. The terror still haunts me as I sit here, 31 years of age, pounding heart, writing this. A group of Year 6 boys came down to where I was sitting by myself and surrounded me, their shadows hanging over me, blocking out the sun. "Your dad's a loser," they kept shouting. "Your dad's a dickhead. My daddy says we hate your daddy." I didn't get it. Why did they hate my dad? What did he do to them? Why had their parents told them to be mean to me? I stood up and tried to push my way past them, tears in my eyes and fumbling my snacks. But they were bigger than me and they were stronger than me. 12-year-old boys against a little 5-year-old girl. They wouldn't let me out of the circle they'd formed around me. They just kept pushing me until one shoved me to the ground. That's when it really began. They continued abusing me. They started throwing food at me, kicking me. My twin sisters, who didn't have any friends either, but always had each other, saw what was happening from the other side of the oval and ran over. However, being aware of the danger, they stopped short of my group of tormentors. I remember reaching out to them, a hysterical 5-year-old, literally putting my hand out for help from my only form of security in that moment, and they just stood there, fear written all over their faces too. That fear in their eyes is something I will never forget, and the reason I understand why they didn't step in to help me. They stood helplessly, shaking their heads, petrified that if they tried to come forward and rescue their baby sister, the boys would hurt them too. All of this over a football game. After some reflection and quite some time spent with psychologists over the years, I can see how that period in time definitely shaped the person I am today. Whilst it's made me super resilient, unapologetic, and proud of who I am at all times, it's also made for a very accepting, extremely understanding, and non-judgmental adult Sophie. Even when people do horrible